Fesh Kumar, welcome. Falchagan Turas Alba Krukel, welcome to the Creative Scotland Roadshow. This is actually number 11 of our roadshows, and we couldn't quite have predicted the demand for them. So we've now spoken at these events to almost 1,000 people. So thanks very much, everyone, for coming along. And it's great to see such a diverse range of people, from local authority to four local authorities, to artists, to our university partners, to cultural organisations. A really good mix of people here today. This is the Creative Scotland Roadshow, and I'm here primarily to talk about our corporate plan, which we released in March and has been particularly well received, as I'll talk about later. But Creative Scotland we very much see as a rallying call, not an organisation. And the rallying call is about shining a light on the cultural projects of Scotland. And one of the great privileges that I've had in the last year or so since I started is to tour Scotland and see some of the most amazing projects. I had a fantastic day here in Dundee, where I was able to see amazing cultural facilities and to get a really in-depth tour of Dundee from the local authorities' perspective, and to see really how culture has had a massive impact here in the city. But I've seen everything, and one of the amazing things about Scotland is I think it's full of stories that haven't been told. I've travelled from Dumfries to Shetland. I've seen the incredible strength of music activity, our youth arts activity. We're a country that's got a national youth orchestra, national youth choirs, national youth dance organisations, national youth theatre. I've seen amazing theatre production here in Dundee, award-winning work from Dundee Rep. I've seen the quality of our visual arts production and had the privilege just recently to go to Venice to see Scotland in Venice, where we exhibited Carla Black. I've seen a lot of work by Scottish filmmakers and the strengths and weaknesses to a certain extent of Scottish film industry. I've had the opportunity to see some of the really diverse work that happens in Scotland, things like Scottish Dance Theatre and the trailblazing work that they're doing in dance and equalities. And I've had the opportunity to see the contribution which lots of different places make to developing a creative Scotland. And the purpose of these images is really to just give you a little bit of a flavour of Scotland. Because if you're working in the visual arts, or you're working in a particular local authority context, or you're working in a particular part of creative industries, you perhaps don't see the overall picture. And the beauty of Creative Scotland is that it has brought together the arts, film and screen industries, and the creative industries into one place. And our job is very much to package things together and to tell those stories of Scotland's creative successes. And our whole corporate plan is about turning the organisation from being less of a funding body and more into a champion and an advocate for the cultural sector, to find the things that are really special here in Scotland, and to celebrate those, and to make sure that people are aware not only of what's on the doorstep, but that people are aware internationally of Scotland's cultural strengths. So this doesn't give you the full impact of the 170 cultural events that I've been to see in my first year, or the geography that I've covered literally from Dumfries to Shetland and Stornoway to Aberdeen. But what I hope it does give you is an insight into the depth and breadth of what Creative Scotland's dealing with. And I finish with this slide, which is a theatre company called Lung Ha. We have a programme in the Edinburgh Fringe called Made in Scotland. 17 of our best theatre and dance production companies in Scotland, and this company is one of them, Lung Ha. I'm particularly impressed by this show, Around the World in 80 Days, and this is a theatre company of people with learning difficulties that produces work of real world-class standard for that genre of work. And we're really proud in Creative Scotland to be able to shine a light and focus on work of this nature, and on our youth activity and on our professional production. So I want to start the presentation by giving you that little overview of what Creative Scotland looks like. Today, that's the context. I'm going to talk about the plan, our budget, and the way we've approached our budget. I'm going to talk a little bit about the partners and the complexity of the partners that we work with. And I'll say a little bit about our investment programmes. I won't go into too much detail about that. But I want to give you a flavour of the work that we've got in progress and how the organisation is developing. Well, Creative Scotland's new organisation, it's probably an exemplar now in public sector reform and shared services, because we've brought together two organisations, Scottish Green, Scottish Arts Council. It's a new organisation, a new board, a new senior team. Delighted to have Venu Dupa with me here today on the front row. He'll be chairing the questions and answers later. And she's joined by our other two creative directors, Ian Munro and Caroline Parkinson. Venu largely deals with cultural production, Ian Munro with access, education, audience development, capital, and Caroline Parkinson with film, music, creative industries, and talent. We've streamlined our staffing. Perhaps people don't realise how much we've streamlined our staffing. At our peak, we had 155 people. We've now got about 92. So we've come down below the target that was set to us by government. As a result, we've saved over £2 million, which we've been able to reinvest back into the cultural sector. We've moved to a new resource base in Edinburgh. It's your facility. Do come and use it. We've got hot desks. We've got meeting spaces that you can use if you're in Edinburgh, and we're regularly hosting events. And we're currently featuring artists from Dundee on our walls. And probably our biggest achievement so far was maintaining our budget for this year, at least, amidst some of the biggest public sector funding cuts that I've ever seen. I think that was a real vote of confidence by the government in what Creative Scotland was doing. And certainly in the context of what was happening to other agencies in Scotland, it was a very good platform for us to build with. We won't escape cuts in the next two or three years, because everywhere in the public sector has got to take a share of the cuts. But I think we've provided a very good platform for our first year. Sorry, my slide isn't moving on. One of the key things about Creative Scotland is we're trying to develop a very different culture. We're shifting the focus to this idea of being a champion and an advocate. And one of the things I said to the staff when we had our first all-staff meeting is I want our team to look out of the window. I don't want to be inside ourselves and talking about us as an organisation. I want to be talking about the cultural activity that's happening out there across Scotland. And I think you'll start to see that happening more and more within Creative Scotland. We've been doing a lot of work positioning ourselves with government, with ministers, with political manifestos prior to the election. We've done a lot of work positioning ourselves with the press, and I think we've seen quite a significant shift in the positivity of press and media coverage about Creative Scotland and about some of the activity. We've seen some negative stuff, but that was from people like the News of the World, and they went out of business. We've done some new things. We started last year, and actually most of the budget was committed when Creative Scotland came into being, because we didn't come into being until July. And so our board decided we wanted to do a few new things which signalled the different way of working. One of them was Creative Futures, a residency programme. As I was travelling around Scotland, I was finding residencies everywhere. You know, three artists in residence on the Isle of Skye at Salma Rostig, an artist in residence in Orkney, and they were all doing fantastic work, but they were terribly isolated and nobody was promoting them, and they just weren't joined up and connected. And when we came back and worked out how many residencies we had 57. So we added £1 million to that, and we've created the thing called Creative Futures, which is probably going to be the largest and most comprehensive artist residency programme in Europe. And as that gets rolled out further over the next few years, we're building up an alumni of hundreds and thousands of artists that will be part of a network, and we can promote it collectively. And we're also hoping we'll bring them together, both virtually and for a conference. We put £1 million additional into film. Everybody was very critical from the film sector about Creative Scotland coming to being, worried they were going to lose their screen agency. But Scottish Screen had a very tight budget. Its budget was dwindling for its film production, and we were immediately, through our savings, able to find £1 million extra to put into film, and that's already levered over £4.5 million of new equity funds through the way that we invested it. Another really simple thing that we did, I came from Newcastle Gateshead across the border in England, and I was running festivals and events. And I probably knew 8 or 9 festivals in Scotland really well. And I came into Scotland and asked the Arts Council for a list of festivals, and they gave me a really good list of the festivals we supported, about 38. But then I kept bumping into festivals that weren't on the list, and we came back and decided we wanted to try and get the full list of what was happening in Scottish festivals. We partnered with an organisation called The List, and they've produced this guide with Creative Scotland of 280 cultural festivals in Scotland. There are 150 music festivals. There are about 10 festivals in Dundee. There are 40 literature festivals. There are 75 festivals in the winter when we're not supposed to have tourism. This is a story that has not been told, and it's been Scotland hiding its light under a bushel and not really celebrating this huge success and its position in the world. So, again, another example of how Creative Scotland will package things together and make more of the content that's out there. And we won't fund probably 200 of those festivals, but we can help them, and we have helped them this year through the Festivals Guide, which has been flying off the tourist information shelves all over Scotland. We've been doing more showcasing, and I think you'll see increasingly more of this as Creative Scotland looking at how we can promote what's here in different contexts. We do Made in Scotland in the Fringe, and that work then showcases to international bookers that come from all over the world. We do Showcase Scotland at Celtic Connections, which showcases some of our best musicians from across the country. We've been to the Venice Architectural Biennale, the Venice Visual Arts Biennale. And that's interesting. You know, we're at the Venice Art Biennale with Carla Black, the Turner Prize nominee, one artist. We're exhibiting in Venice. But we've got students from Dundee invigilating and having training opportunities, looking after that exhibition. A fantastic opportunity for them, and really, something really valuable on their CVs. And we're able to promote Scotland as a place to learn in the visual arts through an event like that. We've had IETM, International Theatre Conference in Glasgow, with I think 30 theatre and dance producers from across Scotland showcased to 500 bookers and venues elsewhere. And we've been doing some showcasing of some really interesting work called Inspiring Communities, projects that we've done, really intensive work that the Arts Council supported, work with the under fives and showing the impact of engaging people at a very early age in the arts. Work with prison communities, a project with Motherwell College and five prisons, where our research is showing that the impact of taking culture activity into prisons improves the behaviour of the residents and actually ends up with them staying not quite as long in prison and therefore saving the government money. If we can make this research show that they don't reoffend, this is really valuable work. So we've been trying to showcase some of the inspiring work that's been happening across Scotland. We've been very busy kind of preparing the ground. When you're setting up a new organisation and trying to change direction of things, there's a lot of work to do. We've done a review of our foundation organisations. We've got about just over 50 of them. We had just over 50 of them. And these are some of the really important organisations, like DCA here, like Dundee Rep, like Scottish Dance Theatre. We wanted to build on the strength of those foundations, but also to check that they were going in the right direction and delivering for Creative Scotland. And we wanted to reward excellence and enable some organisations to develop their aspirations. I'm very pleased here in Dundee we've been able to, within a standstill budget, provide some additional resources for both Dundee Rep and Scottish Dance Theatre. We've been preparing the ground through our research. We commissioned some work into an economic impact study. We've not commissioned the study yet, but we want to try and get a comprehensive picture of the role that culture plays in the economy of Scotland. So an economic impact study. There's been really good work done in Edinburgh that shows the festivals are worth £261 million a year to the economy. There's been some good work done in Glasgow that shows the scale of the economy in Glasgow. There's been pockets of work done all over Scotland. We want to come up with a common methodology that can be used again and again to show the economic impact for Scotland as a whole. So we'll be commissioning that in detail later this year. We've just been scoping it. We've done a survey of our international partnerships. Everywhere I went and Vainu went, we were hearing that, you know, people had this international connection and that this theatre company was travelling abroad. I saw a theatre company a few weeks ago in Glasgow. They've got 160 dates in America with a children's theatre tour. I mean, there's amazing work happening. But again, nobody had packaged that together. So we've done a bit of work that's tried to get a picture of which nations we're working with, what are the strengths in our international partnerships. One of the early things we did was to look at how we could put in place partnerships with broadcasters. And as you'll see later, I think broadcasters are going to be very important to us. So we've put in place partnerships with the BBC, with Channel 4, with STV, and with MG Alba, each different, but in some cases potentially really comprehensive. The BBC, for the first time, we're able to talk to a broadcaster not just about film, but about music, festivals, education programmes, online activity, joint events. And the BBC are going to be using our resource base in Edinburgh for part of their coverage of the Edinburgh festivals, and we're looking at seminars and events with them. We're doing fantastic projects through with the Scottish Book Trust with the BBC called Live Authors, where a live author is filmed in front of a school doing a half-hour event, and then it's streamed through our GLOW network, the Education Scotland's GLOW network, into schools across Scotland. That project has already, with four events, gone to 400,000 school children in Scotland, and there's been kind of online activity linked to it. So broadcasting partnerships, very, very important to us. And MG Alba is going to be a really important partnership to us, not just because of the Gaelic of MG Alba, but MG Alba now on Freeview, Channel 8, Switch On. It's one of the best music programmes on the television. And it's a way of really kind of showcasing work that might not otherwise get broadcast. We've been trying to raise money and develop new partnerships. So we've got a partnership with the Paul Hamlin Foundation, which the Arts Council had trailblazed, that supports artist training, particularly to work in education. We've got a partnership with the Baring Foundation for a programme of arts and older people. And we're going to have a national festival of arts and ageing, something that the whole of Scotland can hopefully get involved in. And particularly relevant to a number of parts of Scotland where we have an increasingly ageing population. We've been doing policy work with education colleagues through the Education and Arts Creativity Action Plan. How do we develop that GLOW network and the creativity portal that goes into schools? There are actually 100 cultural organisations now providing content into that GLOW network for schools. Are there more organisations that could do that? And actually, could we market that internationally once you've invested in that content? Could it be education content that is available beyond Scotland? We've been doing work in the creative industries with partners in Scottish Enterprise, Highlands Islands Enterprise, skills agencies, funding council. And this is a thing called SCIP, the Scottish Creative Industries Partnership, which Fiona Hislop, the Minister, chairs, Cabinet Secretary chairs. I chair the office group of that. And it's trying to bring together all the different agencies who have a role to play in developing the creative industries. Creative Scotland doesn't have significant money to invest in the creative industries yet, but we do have a leadership role in coordinating the input of others, and I'll explain that a little bit further later on. When I was doing this presentation, the first presentation in Dundee, Inverness, back in April, about 5 minutes before I went to do the presentation, somebody showed me this image of this printmaking workshop in Inverness. It was a group of 80-year-olds, 80-plus-year-olds, who were doing printmaking. And the quality of this work was absolutely fantastic. And the exhibition, the book that came out of it, was fantastic. I literally kind of took an image of it and put it into the presentation. I've kept it in. For quite an important reason, really, which is that we do need to think as Creative Scotland of the whole population. I'll talk a lot about how our focus is on people. And with 50% of the population of Scotland being over the age of 50, myself included, and in some areas, you know, even higher percentages of older people coming in, we need to think as an organisation about how we engage with the whole population. So a little bit about our plan. We've given you a copy to take away. We were required by government to write a three-year plan. But given that we see Creative Scotland as a rallying call, something that we can get people behind, our feeling was we needed something that was longer term, that was perhaps a 10-year vision. So within the plan, we've written a series of aspirational statements, which we're actually consulting on, because we've got 10 years and we could change them if they're not right. But we're interested to see whether we've captured what might be a set of aspirations which Scotland can get behind. We've, to deliver that plan and to deliver a three-year plan, obviously our budget is a very important part of it. But what we found was we had lots and lots of little budgets in the Arts Council and Scottish Screen. Officially, there were 108 separate budgets. In reality, there were over 150 separate budgets. There was £20,000 in that drawer, there was £40,000 in that cupboard, and nobody knew where all the money was. So we were very committed to changing that, and we've actually streamlined to 15 investment programmes and made this shift from being a funding body to investment agency. And we use the word investment really with confidence. It's a word which actually arts organisations sometimes find a bit difficult. But if you look at the definition of investment, it's not just about money. It's about finding something worthwhile to spend time, energy and commitment on. And it's not just about our money. It's about us being the champion behind something, about the advice that we can give to things and investing our human time into it. So we use investment all the time as a phrase. I wanted to just share with you two or three of our long-term aspirations. And the things which are kind of believable, but are also quite aspirational, and you feel you can get to them in 10 years and say you've achieved them. So one of them is Scotland as a year-round festival nation, recognised as one of the top 10 places in the world to visit for culture. It's believable, isn't it? But there's lots of things we can do to make that a reality and make sure that the world knows that we're one of the top 10 places in the world to visit for culture. And we're doing a lot of work with Visit Scotland and Event Scotland around this. And that festivals guide is just a kind of first step of how you can package things. Scotland having the highest levels of participation in the arts in the UK, with creativity reaching into every home. The good news is that we already have reasonable levels of participation, but not to all parts of the population or to all parts of Scotland. Actually, Dundee has a slightly higher level of participation than the Scottish average. I think about 77% in some way engage with the arts through participation. But we really want to try and take creativity into every home. And that's where things like partnerships with broadcasters can be really important. 10-year aspiration to be recognised as an international leader for the arts for children and young people. We've had a youth music initiative putting £10 million a year into youth music. It's been going for 7 years. It's a kind of generational change that is happening. We have all these national youth companies. We have amazing professional production in theatre for young people. How can we build on that strength and really position ourselves as an international leader in this area? So that's just a flavour, and there's another seven or eight in the plan. Our objectives are very simple: to invest in talent, to invest in quality production, audiences access and participation, the cultural economy and places. And perhaps the investment in places is a very new language and one that's perhaps not been used by cultural organisations in the past, but I'll explain that in a few minutes. I've identified three cross-cutting themes. Not that everything we do will impact in these areas, but we'll have an eye to international work and export of Scottish culture. We'll have an eye to ensuring we have equalities running through everything that we do. And we'll have an eye to education and the huge role that the cultural sector plays in education. Setting up the new organisation, it was quite important to our board that we set out some values and some principles of how we're going to operate. And I'll not spend too much time on this, but there are some quite important things in this. These are the values that we came up with. We're going to be passionate, we're going to be creative, committed to equality, access and diversity. Proud to be rooted in Scotland, but with a global perspective. So really kind of focused on where our roots are, but looking beyond the borders in terms of how we present ourselves. And this is the one that the board spent the most time on, determined to be distinctive, bold, and to value risk. We have to take risks as an organisation. You achieve more if you take more risks. I don't mind being slagged off in the News of the World and the Sun because we've invested in something that's inherently risky. We've got to take risks, and we've got to empower the cultural sector to take risks, because often the most amazing things are achieved when you do so. Some operating principles. The first one is particularly important. I want to dwell on this. You ask artists what an arts council or a cultural agency is there for, and often they'll say, well, it's to support artists. Well, it is, but that's not our primary reason, and we've been very clear about this. We have a duty to the population, and we have a duty to the arts, but actually we're driven by a commitment to deliver for the people of Scotland. Artists and creative practitioners are absolutely central to delivering that and at the heart of our thinking. But our primary focus is about those 8-year-old ladies in Inverness, is about the lads in East Dunbartonshire that had never had access to dance, are about people that perhaps haven't had the opportunity to engage with the arts. So that if there's one thing that's at the heart of our thinking, it's that. And it's interesting, there's a press article today in the Daily Telegraph about our 3-year plan for 2012 and 2014, and it's kind of a political article saying that this has been cooked up by the government to promote independence. It's absolutely not. It's been cooked up by us to do something about celebrating the creativity of Scotland and providing opportunities for people that haven't accessed the arts to access them in the future. We're going to be collaborative and work in partnership wherever we can. We'll often try and give other people the job of taking a lead on things. And we're very committed to providing leadership, both from Creative Scotland and standing up and being prepared to lead on things, but also to empower the cultural sector to be leaders in themselves and to give people mandates to get on with things and to find the leaders within Scotland that can really take things forward. We're going to try and reduce bureaucracy. We've already done quite a bit of that. And Vania's just told me this morning we're going to set up a bureaucracy-busting team. They're going to put red dots on anything that we don't need to do within the organisation. But we've already, we've streamlined and simplified all our application forms. Lots of things have already been done. It's been relatively straightforward. But we're going to take robust decisions. We're not going to hide behind taking decisions. In the past, we've used a lot of specialist advisors, and we will still use advisors where we need to buy in external advice. But on the whole, we'll take decisions and stand behind them. But what we've done is we've taken decision-making away from individuals in art forms, and we've developed teams that take decisions about our investments. So there's a much broader way of looking at our investments. Another important principle, we're going to invest in our staff and specialist advice, because that team of 92 people, it's really important that they're part of the cheering section for advocacy of the cultural sector in Scotland. I'm going to try and unpack our objectives a little bit for you and say a bit about what they mean. Investing in talent. Well, I went to see a show last summer at the Fringe by a theatre company from the Highlands, and it's called We Home From Home. And in their programme, instead of having the CVs of all the actors with, Michael Mara, musician Dundee, has performed at this venue, that venue, this festival, and such an actor has performed 3 times in Taggart, they had this map. And the moment I saw it, I thought, this is our job. This is our job. It's about career paths. It's about how you take talent, how you engage young people with talent through schools, education, how you get them onto a track, either as a professional career or in a voluntary capacity to engage with the cultural sector. And it's finding the stations and the platforms where that talent really gets added. It's about looking at the career paths of how artists move from being in a college or a university through to working in a gallery or a theatre. And although this is just the career paths for five individuals, it actually works for an entire cultural sector for dance or an entire cultural sector for the visual arts. And what our job to do is to find those stations and find those platforms and find where we don't have the stations, find how we take artists and allow them to move off beyond our network in Scotland and to work internationally, and to bring them back at their peak of their careers to contribute to Scotland and perhaps be a trainer or mentor artists. So this has been a very powerful image, and I've stood up in Parliament in front of 20 MSPs without the image in front of me and described it, and it kind of works. And so we're holding this as an image in our minds as we think about our role in investing in talent, in deciding which are the foundations, which are the talent hubs that we invest in across Scotland, which are the places that are really, really important stations that a lot of activity revolves around. Quality arts, artistic production. This is where we spend a lot of our money. This is Scottish Dance Theatre from here in Dundee. And we spend the lion's share of our budget goes into quality arts production. But perhaps in the past, we haven't looked at it strategically to see whether we're producing the right work for the venues that we've got across Scotland. We haven't necessarily really identified our strengths. So our work in quality arts production will be looking at that talent map and seeing where we really kind of grow our strengths and where, in some instances, we address our weaknesses. Audiences, access and participation. This is a massive area, and it's very difficult for an organisation, even of our size, to try and touch every base. And we've got to take some early decisions about where we concentrate. Do we concentrate on under fives and have a sustained programme of investment in under fives that might change the generation for the future? Do we do really intensive projects that show the power of culture in different sectors, like that Arts in Prisons work, where you can demonstrate that a body of work is of value to another government spending department? Do we target particular communities? Do we target older people as a growing area of the population that probably has lower levels of participation and attendance in the arts? We haven't come up with all the answers yet. We've come up with some statements of things we're going to start to test, and working with older people is one of them. Working with crime is another area we're going to tackle, both working with communities that are affected by crime and working with prisons. But those aren't all the areas. Cultural economy, or ultural economy, this somehow seems to have arrived on this slide. I don't know how that lost to see. It was always in there on the other 10 presentations. Cultural economy, it's not just the creative industries. It's about cultural tourism. It's about the contribution that the cultural sector makes to employment in general in Scotland. Our role is to coordinate the leadership of the creative industries and to find the areas where there's growth potential. Actually, is there growth potential in the film industry or not? Is there growth potential in the music industry or not? How does the games industry grow and contribute to the cultural economy of Scotland? Trying to help agencies like Scottish Enterprise, Islands Enterprise and others find ways to invest their resources in. So it's part of it is an advocacy job, and part of it, I think universities and colleges are going to be critically important to our work in creative industries, and there's been very important piece of work done on that, looking at the role that higher education plays. How do we join things up? One of my premises is, one of our aspirations is to really sell Scotland as a place to live, work, learn and visit through culture. How do we connect up that contribution of Scotland as a place to learn? You look at the collective contribution of our universities and specialist colleges in the arts, and it's a really strong story that we can sell. And finally, last but not least, places and their contribution to Creative Scotland. On my second day in the job, I went to Dumfries. And I know Dumfries quite well because I grew up in Cumbria and I've always lived around the borders. We had an interesting discussion with some officers of the council and some councillors and some arts people about what is the unique contribution which Dumfries makes to the arts in Scotland. And it was really interesting conversation because it actually had quite a lot to contribute. It's a gateway. It's now developing a very major gateway border crossing sculpture. It's a place which has a very high density of artists living in it. It's actually a fantastic film location. An awful lot of films get made in Dumfries. Funnily enough, a lot of horror films for some reason. It's a bit strange given the beautiful landscape. It's got some famous artists, Andy Goldsworthy, historically J.M. Barrie and the connections there. But how do you really describe the cultural contribution, both historic and contemporary, that a place like Dumfries is contributing? And it started a train of thought, really, that everywhere I went in Scotland, I was finding that different places had a unique contribution to play in the creative picture of the nation. And so we want to really drive this as a way of engaging with communities, engaging with places. And yesterday we launched, as part of our 2012 Year of Creative Scotland programme, where the government's given us a themed year of Creative Scotland, we've put out a challenge to find the most creative places in Scotland. We're going to award 3 awards a year to a small community, a medium-sized community and a larger community. We're not involving cities, although a community within a city could apply. But we want to find the creative places and to celebrate the contribution which creativity plays to islands, communities, different parts of Scotland. Because geography matters, geography is important, and we've been very open and transparent in our plan. This is actually a map of where historically our major investments into foundation funding and flexibly funded organisations happened. And we're very proud of our investment in Edinburgh as a festival city. It's the place where Dundee Rep goes and showcases in the festival. It's a place where many artists have that important career break. We're very proud of Glasgow and the intensity of cultural production and the film industry in Glasgow and the density of our investment there. We're actually pretty pleased with our investment in Dundee. I think it's 5th highest level of our investment in Scotland. And also in the Highlands, where through work of a lot of agencies, there's a real strength of cultural agencies. But there are some very significant gaps. The borders, Moray, Angus, areas that don't have a strong cultural infrastructure. We need to try and address that without robbing Peter to pay Paul. We need to find ways that we can match up the cultural production with the venue base. Have we got the right cultural producers producing work for the venues? So we're increasingly trying to think in terms of geography, and I'm personally very committed to, I have been everywhere in Scotland but Stranraer, more or less, very committed to really understanding how the geography of Scotland works and trying to unlock the contribution that each of those areas can play. So on to our budget, slightly overrunning, so I'll speed up. Our budget, fewer more strategic budgets. We're planning over 3 years because although we've only got a 1-year settlement from the government, we can plan for our lottery money in advance. We've tried to clarify where our lottery money goes and where our treasury money goes. On the whole, we've got rid of all art form budgets. The only art form budget we have is film, which is for a particular reason. So everything now is more generic. We're trying to be more transparent, and we're going to test new ways of working. We're going to look at endowments. We're going to look at online funding. We're going to look at how we can use our money to leverage philanthropy. On the whole, our budgets will be more open access. They'll be clearer. There won't be £20,000 locked in a drawer. I think, you know, the smallest budget's £250,000. The largest is £6.5 million. These are much bigger budgets. And we're also devolving quite a bit of our money. We already did devolve some money, but we're devolving more of our money to others where they're better placed to manage it for us. this is our budget. And when we were trying to get find what the budget looked like and to move to a new budget, our senior team, we came up with this exercise, and we drew 70 squares on the wall, and each square was £1 million. Because we didn't want to think in those penny parcels, we wanted to think in bigger strategic blocks. And we then reconstructed our budget from that. And the purple is the money we get from the government, 35.5 million. But a huge amount of that is committed in advance. All of this here is committed on foundation organisations, 7 million committed on organisations called flexibly funded organisations, 60 organisations who do very good work. And there was relatively little flexibility in it, in what the government gave us. And we had a small amount of flexibility, about £3 or 4 million, and it was trying to do everything. It was trying to do a bit of access, a bit of talent, a bit of supporting individual artists, a bit of festivals. And it wasn't really being very focused. And what we were doing was we were supplanting it with lottery money, and we weren't giving ourselves a strong tactical argument with the government. So what we did was we decided to just focus with our government money on talent and investing in individuals, individual artists, skills, training, and to do the rest of our activity with the lottery investment. And so what that enabled us to do was to go to the government and be very clear about where their money was spent. The red money is money we get from the government for specific purposes, £10 million for the Youth Music Initiative, £2 million for the Edinburgh Expo Fund, which supports things like that Made in Scotland showcasing, just over £1 million for the Innovation Fund, which supports digital content, creative industries work, and some money for cash back for communities working with communities that are affected by crime. And then the blue money is the lottery, where thankfully we were able to start with a bit of a clean slate. So we've designed a new suite of lottery programmes, and we're gradually rolling those out and introducing them. Ah, this is obviously some sort of gremlin in Dundee that one of our great, or not so great, national newspapers, the Daily Express, described me as Andrew Dyslexic Dixon, and obviously they're right, because I can't spell any of these words. This is just a breakdown of where our treasury money goes, and you'll see a large amount of it goes into the big organisations and relatively little flexibility. Our other treasury money that we get for particular things goes to a Youth Music Initiative, Edinburgh Expo, cash back for communities, and some money for arts and business. But the really interesting story is our lottery growth, and this is a bit of a tricky story at the moment when you're bidding for your next 3 years of funding from the government, and when local authorities are being hard hit, and other agencies like enterprise agencies are getting cuts. But our lottery income is growing for three reasons. One, you're all spending more money on trying to win the national lottery in a recession. Secondly, we get the money back that we lent to the Olympics for a few years. But we get the income back that we previously got. And thirdly, the UK government has decided to reinstate the proportions to good causes like the Heritage Lottery and the arts. So over the next 3 years, we see a kind of stepped increase in our lottery money. To give you a figure, it was £18 million and it will be £27 million by the end of the next 3 years. So that's a pretty significant increase. And what that's enabled us to do is to come out of the stocks with our corporate plan and be pretty confident about delivering some new things. And we've tried to think in three and in some cases 4 year blocks. So we've put a block of money together for quality production in film. We've immediately increased our film budget by £1 million in the first year, and we've increased it up to £3.75 million by the end of the third year. Film also now benefits from a lot of our other funds, like talent, like festivals as well. So whereas in the past it had to do everything, now it just focuses on film production. We have money for project activity in arts production. We have money for touring festivals and events. That's just kind of ongoing activity. We've put money together for cultural economy. This is about the sustainability of cultural organisations. How can we make them more sustainable, environmentally sustainable and financially sustainable? How can we test different models of cultural organisations being more self-sustaining. We'll also, through that programme, be trying out some of these things like online giving and other models post-2012. If we stop funding organisations, we don't want to just cut them off straight away. We want to help transition them into perhaps different ways of working. So that's what that budget's about. Place, we have included our capital programme within Place. We've built a capital budget of about £20 million over 4 years that's going to be hopefully supplemented by some additional money that we negotiated with the SNP Manifesto for Youth Arts. And we're going to roll out a capital programme in the autumn. We're only going to spend about £1 million this year on capital on small-scale activity, but there'll be a new capital programme that'll be trying to address gaps, trying particular focus on artist-led spaces, but it'll particularly look at some of the kind of geographical gaps for cultural facilities and improvements to existing facilities. And we've created an events programme, and you may have seen some of the press on this. We launched yesterday or the day before a programme of festivals and events for 2012 and 2014. 2012, Year of Creative Scotland, but it's also the Cultural Olympiad, and a real opportunity, actually, because London's full, to drag visitors, journalists and others into Scotland. And we've got this themed year, and it's a great chance to use all our resources, but to enhance them with some special events in 2012. And likewise, for 2014, the Commonwealth Games, Creative Scotland's been given the brief for doing the national cultural programme as opposed to the Glasgow cultural events programme. So we hope that you'll all engage with us, and there's enormous opportunities there. A word about our partners. We've got a lot of them. And the reason for putting this in the plan was that perhaps arts organisations, cultural organisations see us just working with them. But we have, if we're going to really get this rallying call right and get Scotland behind creativity, we need to work with all these agencies, with government agencies, the 32 local authorities, agencies like the British Council, with development agencies like Business Gateways, Scottish Enterprise, Cultural Enterprise Office, with the broadcasters and the media. I'd see the press as real partners with us. We need to get away from the fact that they just are critics and commentators. We need to see the media as actual partners in our activity. In education, we've got to work with the colleges, the universities, skills agencies. Internationally, we've got a whole series of partners we can work with. The national companies, who we have a good relationship with, we don't fund them directly, and lots of charities and foundations. So it's a pretty complex picture, and we've already, you know, adding lots of other people into this mix who weren't mentioned in the printed plan. So a little bit of work in progress. We're doing a youth arts review, and there's a brief in draft, and that'll be commissioned in the autumn. The economic impact study I've mentioned, we're just finishing up the foundation review. We're developing a national Gaelic arts strategy with other partners, Bord na Gaelic and other agencies. We're looking at some work around new investment models. We won't roll that out till 2012, this idea of, you know, endowments, online giving, all of that. We want to test that out. We've still got a bit of work to complete our staff team. Delighted to hear have one or two new people here today. We've got Alistair stood at the back, who's just joined us this week, who's leading our research programme, joins us from London, from the National Audit Office. We've now got a creative industries person has just joined us. Our Director of Communications, Kenneth Fowler, joins us in a couple of weeks' time from Scottish Natural Heritage. So we've almost completed the team. And then a final bit of work in progress is our website. And we had to put a new website up when we launched, but we have to tender. So we just put up a very basic website at the moment, and we've tendered to do a proper website, which will hopefully launch at the end of October. But what's been really interesting is that our very temporary website with the words Creative Scotland in it has had a massive amount of traffic without any significant marketing. It's the kind of power of the name. And so we've got great optimism for when we get the all singing, all dancing website in place later this year. We've got a few important pieces of work that we're about to do. We're going to review various sectors, theatre, music, dance, visual arts and crafts this year. We're going to try and draw the map for them. We're going to try and draw that diagram of what's happening in those sectors, what's happening in those sectors in education, what's happening in those sectors in international work, what's happening in those sectors in career paths, what's happening in those sectors in terms of cultural export. And that'll inform our future commissioning of work post-2013. At the moment, we fund these 60 flexibly funded organisations, but they're all doing great work, but we hadn't decided how many theatre companies we needed and where we put them. And so we'll move to a model that's much more about commissioning theatre companies to work in this field or in this geographical area. Our investment programmes are nearly all rolled out, and thanks to Tavania Duper, who's done a huge amount of work on getting those in place, and they're up and running, and we're making grants. We've also introduced a new thing called the Ideas Bank, which is just about people emailing us and saying, got an idea, what should we do with it? And we've got a team that meets and sees all these ideas, and I think we had 27 in the first month, and with some of them we say they're completely barking mad, but we love it. We'd like to find a way of backing it. Others will say they're completely barking mad, go away. And some will say come into our investment programmes, and some will say let's bring together these partners to make them happen. So the Ideas Bank is a different way of looking at things. It's rather than people applying for money, it's about kind of sharing an idea and seeing how we can help move it forward. These are our investment programmes. I'm really not going to spend much time on these because they're all in the packs. They're all available on the web. We've streamlined them, the common criteria. A lot of them are open all year. Some of them have deadlines, but on the whole, we've moved to rolling programmes. And we've set up different ways of giving advice. So we have surgeries and helplines. We've got surgery today. A number of you will have been booked into it, where we come out and meet people and talk about their projects. But we also have a helpline where you can just ring in at designated times. Just a little bit on devolved funds. We've devolved money to Awards for All. This is £500,000 to the Big Lottery Fund, and they deal with some of our smaller grants under £10,000 for community-based projects. Voluntary arts activity in particular gets supported through this, a lot of brass bands, things like that. We devolve money to the Cultural Enterprise Office for a programme called Starter for Six. This is business startups. Supporting new cultural enterprises, new cultural businesses. It's about £250,000. Arts and Business have a fund for matching arts sponsorship, encouraging new arts sponsorship. Our Gaelic Arts Officer, Brian O'Hara, has a small fund of £50,000 to seed fund new Gaelic initiatives. And our Youth Music Initiative, people may not realise, but £8 million of that is devolved to local authorities. So an authority like Dundee will get, can't remember the exact figure, £170,000, something of that order, for youth music activity. And we're devolving a lot of our residency money through the Creative Futures programme. We'll have designated residency hosts, and they will decide which residencies they run rather than us. We've had a great reaction to the plan, and I mean, it's been really heartwarming, and it's been great in terms of our relationship with the government. These are just a few of the comments that came in from serious players, and from people that, you know, had perhaps in some instances been slightly critical of Creative Scotland before it came into being. So to have turned round some of those detractors and have them saying such positive things about us is great. But, you know, we will get critics because we've moved away from something that people knew, writers that used to apply to a writer's budget to a literature department, filmmakers that used to apply to a film budget in a film department. We've changed things. So we know we'll get criticism, and, you know, there'll always be more letters of complaint than there are letters of praise. You just have to live with that. But I think the kind of response to the plan has made us think that we've got a few things right in terms of our movement forward. So, a few messages. Here to serve the population of Scotland. Question we're asking everybody: how can you contribute to a Creative Scotland? If you're an artist, a local authority chief executive, a university, how can you contribute? This is a marathon, not a sprint. when we put out the plan, we were slightly inundated with people coming forward and saying, we've got this idea, we've got this project. It's a three-year plan, not a three-month plan. So, you know, we don't have to bring every idea forward straight away. We're looking for partners and ideas, and we're trying to get away from application and rejection and have more conversations and collaboration. And we're trying to ask you to help us celebrate Scotland's creative achievements. And to do that, we need to improve how we tell the stories of success. Let us have those good images. Let us have those good success stories, one-liners about really interesting things that have happened, about somebody's life that's been changed. We want you to help us raise the ambition for Scotland in creative terms. And we want to try and put creativity in the core script of Scotland. And I was really pleased that the government has got a creativity initiative within civil service. If we could get every organisation in Scotland looking at the role that culture and creativity plays in how they deliver their activity, we could make an absolute sea change. So that's our plan. Look forward to working with you all over the next few years to make it a reality. Thank you.
For refreshments afterwards, but we also did want to leave time for some questions. So if you don't mind, I'm going to eat into our tea and buns time so that we can take at least a few questions. And don't worry, Andrew, I've been to Stranraer. So between us, we covered the geography. Okay, so it's over to you, really, for reactions, comments, questions. That was pretty comprehensive, but you might want, Andrew skipped over a few slides, so you might want to ask a little bit on one of the slides he skipped over. You might want to introduce a new element that you want us to think about. So please feel free to ask whatever you'd like. Who's going to be brave and ask the first question? Yes, sir.
Probably, but maybe a controversial question. You spoke a lot about the prisons and going into prisons and adding value to other budgets or removing costs to society by being creative. Am I understanding that correctly? And then we spoke about the games industry. And while I have interest in the games industry, and this, I do believe that there's research saying that it delivers a negative impact to the social economy. In a financial sense, it brings in a revenue, but in a cultural sense, it can be hugely detrimental. And it has, there's research in America saying that it actually has negative impacts on life. And so, have we explored that?
No, we haven't.
And I think it's a very important thing that should be.
One of the things you've always got to get across with an organisation like Creative Scotland, we'll be investing, if we do invest in the games industry, it's through our digital innovation, and it'll be about creating jobs in Dundee, or it'll be about creating opportunities for artists to engage with the gaming industry. We have relatively little investment into that sector in what we do. Other things we do are about kind of social, and are absolutely about, you know, getting people away from the TV screens and computer screens to engage in participation in the cultural sector. They're not counter to each other. We're not going to turn around and say we're not going to do that or we're not going to do that. We have to make choices.
It's more about the idea of this Scotland being the creative place, and it's not so much about putting people in front of their TVs and in front of their computer. It's a much more deep ingrained psychology that's being generated by the games industry. Is the question?
Well, that's the subject for probably a seminar, which I'm sure Georgina will organise.
The guy here. Unfortunately, I think you're way off the mark.
Right, so. Yeah.
But anyway, do send us the research because we're always interested to hear research, and we've also got a new research person here today, so he'll look forward to reading that. Other questions? Any other comments? Yes, please.
Your website lists 111 supported organisations, of which 73 are based in Glasgow and Edinburgh. There are three based in Dundee, none in Angus and three in Aberdeen. Can I ask how you propose to address that geographical imbalance?
I'll just go back to the slide.
It's interesting because we've just done a review of our foundation organisations, as Andrew mentioned. One of the things we decided with that was that that was going to be quite an incremental process, in the sense that we weren't going to be able to address historical inequities through that. But I think we should also go back to that plan, the We Home From Home plan, Because I think our sector reviews will tell us a bit more about what's needed and what isn't in various parts of the country. I think those figures are slightly misleading in the sense that a company may be based in Glasgow, but it may be doing dates all over Scotland, and Puppet Animation is a fantastic company that's performed in every local authority in Scotland. It's got a great distribution of touring. Getting that data and telling that story is also important, rather than just thinking about geographically where a company is specifically located.
Yeah. We're really transparent about this. You know, it's us that's told that story, not anyone else. We're presenting that, but we're presenting in a positive sense that it's actually quite good that we invest so much in Edinburgh, and that Edinburgh has positioned itself in the world, and that it can be a showcase for, I think there's 46 different companies from across Scotland performing in some way in the fringe. That's important. Likewise, you know, Glasgow. But we're very committed to addressing those things. I mean, I'm meeting the chief executive of Angus Council this afternoon, and you know, we don't have any permanently resident organisations. We have North East Arts touring into Angus. We have other cultural organisations working there. And you have to look at broader geographies, because local authority boundaries are not necessarily natural boundaries and places. You know, the places like the Lothians have a natural benefit from Edinburgh. Angus, Perth, Kin, Rossall, and Dundee, you know, has to be seen in a kind of broader context. But we're committed to addressing it where we need to. You know, I was in Argyll and Bute a week before, four weeks ago now, and we've got two fantastic cultural organisations on the Isle of Mull. We've got a cultural organisation on the other fringe of Argyll and Bute, but we've a huge area in the middle where there aren't cultural organisations. So here's a local authority area that actually, on the face of it, has got quite a lot of Creative Scotland investment, but are we delivering to other communities in Helensburgh and elsewhere? So we're thinking geography in the way we're planning in the future, and we're asking questions about, if you've got an organisation, we actually, the Scottish Arts Council stopped funding Pitlochry Festival Theatre, but Pitlochry Festival Theatre is a fantastic resource. And we're actually now into a conversation with Pitlochry Festival Theatre about the contributions that they can make to addressing some of our geographical issues elsewhere, and hopefully they're going to start coming out and doing work in other parts of Scotland. So we're absolutely on top of that as a subject area. There will always be areas that, you know, some areas have other strengths. They have strengths in sport, or they have strengths in heritage. We can't be strong everywhere. But we also need to celebrate places like Dundee. I mean, there's no accident that Dundee gets such a high level of Creative Scotland investment. It's because you've got a local authority here that absolutely gets culture, has got a cultural strategy that's really meaningful, that they invest in themselves, they have a good team, they've seen the economic benefits, they've seen the social benefits, and that they've used culture and creativity to enormous benefit. We need to, you know, take those case studies and show them elsewhere. Aberdeen is a big issue. You mentioned Aberdeen. Aberdeen Shire, we've 5 cultural organisations that we fund in there. But Aberdeen, you know, city of great wealth, but the wealth hasn't come back into the cultural sector, and that's a big challenge for us.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Jenny Marr, I'm a member of the Scottish Parliament for North East Scotland. I wanted to ask what conversations and work you're doing with Scottish Development International and also the Scottish Government on promoting our cultural contribution abroad for the purposes of bringing in more tourism and business to Scotland.
Okay, I'll ask Fainu to answer that, because Fainu leads on all our international work.
It's really interesting that when I came to Scotland, I'd previously been doing an international brief elsewhere, and one of my tasks was, you know, how can Scotland really up itself in terms of profile in internationalism, both in terms of cultural tourism, showcasing, but also deeper international cultural engagement. So we began to look at the networks. We also began to look at the systems we had in place. We began to look at the stories we might be able to tell. And whilst there is fantastic work going on all the time, for example, at the Edinburgh Festival alone, I think we've got 26 international delegations, and we're receiving them at our new base in Waverley Gate. So we've got that kind of cultural diplomacy side going on. But in order for us to be able to tell the story of the 160 dates in the USA, the partnerships we're funding in Sweden, the ongoing touring that Made in Scotland does, and we've had ongoing touring through all the Made in Scotland programmes, through the Expo Fund, the fantastic work in Venice, the collaboration with Scottish Government that we took to the Architecture Biennale, in order to tell those stories, we need to get better data gathering systems, and not only ourselves, but across with Visiting Arts, across with the British Council, Scottish Government, and our international studies begun to do that for us. We could still package it better. But I think in this first year of Creative Scotland, what we want to do is make sure we have all those systems in place. And then we hope that jointly with the British Council and others, we'll be able to do a lot more promotion. We've been talking with the First Minister recently about how we can attract more film premieres, how can we make more of our locations, division that we have. Our locations, for example, we only invest 100,000. I think we've seen more than 40-fold return from that. I think the figures are into the millions. So we're really proud of the work we're achieving, but we've got a lot more to do to tell the story. I'll come back to you, because we had a contribution. Yes,
can you tell us more about the review processes, specifically visual arts, what I'm interested in?
The sector review. And
yeah,
do you want to
say
about that?
Well, we've just agreed the briefs for those. And what we want to do is to do the same brief for everything. So we do the same brief for a visual arts review as we do for a theatre review, so we can look at what the contributions are in education across all of them, what the economic contributions are across all of them, and so on. What the review is about is that mapping. The first stage would be an audit and mapping of what we've got, what cultural organisations we've got delivering things, and then finding where the gaps are. And it may be that we find we haven't got an organisation that is doing training for new curators, or that we have a real problem in visual arts touring to rural areas. And what it will do is it will inform which agencies we then commission to do work for us. It'll tell us we have, you know, lots of galleries in Edinburgh, and that we don't have enough visual arts activity in the Highlands. Mm-hmm. There's things we know will come out of it. It'll tell us what the strengths are in visual arts education in Scotland, but also where there might be gaps in visual arts education in Scotland. So it's about laying the foundations to inform our future decision making. Some of the reviews we're going to do in-house, and that's one that I think we're almost certainly going to do in-house. We'll bring in some external advice and expertise and have a panel that advises us. Some of the other reviews, like music and theatre, we're going to commission external, kind of an objective consultancy to look at the picture. Does that answer the question?
And what about inputting? You know, what's the opportunities for inputting?
Yeah, there'll be lots of opportunities. There'll be a kind of consultation process and events around. Yeah.
Georgina.
I'm really interested in the cultural links with the universities and the strength of the art college sector, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the internationalisation strategy, we do an awful lot of work internationally, and I think that ought to also be brought into your international portfolio. But we also have a resource that I think is underdeployed in Scotland, and how we can actually join the gaps between that sector and Creative Scotland, I think we really need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd welcome that opportunity. I mean, creative ambassadors, whatever, taking some kind of role there.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
About 15 years ago, Andrew, the vision for the DCA was developed. And you're right, the effect it's had on the city has been quite incredible at all levels. It would be remiss, I think, to let you walk away from here without hearing your views on the V&A and how Creative Scotland will support the development of the V&A in the city, because that is the next cultural development in the city. Not just for the city, I think it's got wider implications for the whole of Scotland.
First of all, can I just suppose there was a bit of music in the background through my entire presentation. My iPod's been running in the programme. In my pocket. So you're having my choice of music on. I was looking for it and thinking, yeah, I haven't mentioned the V&A throughout it. I was in Newcastle Gateshead before I came to this job, and probably my biggest CV card was the fact I did the big cultural regeneration strategy, and we developed £200 million of the cultural facilities, the Baltic, Sage Gateshead, the Angel of the North, the things, and talked a lot about culture and regeneration, and I think there's very few places in the UK where you can genuinely say that culture is leading regeneration. It did in Newcastle Gateshead, and it is in Dundee. And I was approached by the V&A people about 3 years ago, actually 2 or 3 years ago. They came and talked to us in Gateshead about our experiences, and I really kind of felt the vision of it. I thought that this is something really special, and it's ambitious. It's challenging initially. Why Dundee? But why not Dundee? And it's a world-class site. It's a world-class brand of an organisation. It's going to provide something national for Scotland, based in Dundee. It's going to do a lot for the creative industries. It's obviously, you know, the universities and Georgina, who's been a powerhouse in driving it forward. Central to it, and it will do a lot for their reputation. I think it's a great potential addition to Scotland, and I don't think people should be worried about it sort of draining. I think it'll irrigate Dundee and irrigate Scotland rather than drain resources from other things. So Creative Scotland's, you know, publicly behind it. We've talked about, we haven't got to the point of signing on the dotted lines about money. We expect it'll be, you know, probably one of the biggest applicants to our capital programme. And one of the things that pleased me the most about the government's budget settlement this year was the fact they had the confidence to back a new project in the V&A and to put the first capital in and to commit to it. So Creative Scotland, you know, the V&A will be one of our foundation organisations. The V&A will, I'm sure, be supported in some way through our capital programme. But I think it's got enormous benefits for Scotland as a whole, so we're well behind it.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to seem
defensive.
No, that's
all right. I was just checking around.
No,
that's
fine.
Guilt.
I just don't like to hear people using the Holy Trinity of TV, prison, and video games together. It's a bit of an old one. And what I was here to ask was, I'd like to take the, obviously I'm from the games industry. I've worked for about 17 years in the industry, and what I'm looking to try and do is to try and find a collaboration between my skills, education, Scottish language, to try and do something that I can put back into the curriculum for excellence. I've tried to find the body to try and approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
I've sent out emails and whatnot. I've not really had anything back. Just
mm-hmm.
looking for a little bit of direction for me to take my skills to work with the Scottish language and
are
education.
Are you able to stay for our investment surgeries afterwards?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Please stay and we can
no
talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the creativity portal, you know, is the vehicle that if we could develop something that
absolutely. I just want to ask a question. Thank you.
It's great.
Yes.
It's a really simple question. Quality framework was quite a useful framework that involved a lot of consultation with the sector, worked across Artford. Are you going to be using that again, thinking about quality and presenting case studies, telling the story? What kind of framework are you putting?
Yeah, this is a piece of work that's done by the Arts Council. It's a really good piece of work that, you know, helps cultural organisations to look at themselves and ensure that, you know, they have their own kind of self-monitoring of quality and evaluation. It was used a little bit too rigidly by the Scottish Arts Council in the past, and we're trying to get rid of bureaucracy. But where people find it still useful and they want to use it, we're very actively encouraging it, and we refer to it in our documents.
Okay.
You know, we don't want to tear anything up that was good and that's done well in the past, and that was a really valuable piece of work, I think. And actually, it's been used beyond Scotland.
Okay. Any other pressing comments or questions? Otherwise, we can take them over tea afterwards. Okay. Well, since nobody's been quick enough to put up their hand, what I'd like to just say is that through these roadshows, we've been working with Live Music Scotland, and at the end of each presentation, we're able to present a piece of music with Live Music.